The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Okay, so welcome to episode 21 of the Women's Football Podcast. My name's Kieran, as always, and as you will have seen, for those that follow on Twitter, I've been banging the drum of my co-host for this show, Chelsea Ladies defender Gilly Flaherty. Gilly, thank you for joining me. How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. A bit tired, but I'm good.
A bit tired after all, after Gilly, of course, won her FA Cup tie quarter-final against Manchester City yesterday. We will talk to her a little bit more about that a little bit later. So on this show, we will be looking at the start of the FAWSL. Obviously, that kicked off since our last show. Well, as mentioned, we'll have a discussion with Gilly about the FA Cup quarter-final ties that have taken place. We'll have a look at the recent PFA awards that were announced. We'll also have a look at the UEFA Champions League. Obviously, we now know who our finalists are. Plenty more to talk about, so we best crack on, because I'm sure Gilly has got much more important things to be doing than chatting to me. So let's crack on.
The Women's Football Podcast would like to thank our partners. Want more women's football? Subscribe to She Kicks magazine at shekicks.net. And the Women's Football Podcast is part of the Soccer Desk Network.
thesoccerdesk.com. Okay, so let's kick off the show by having a look at the Women's Super League in England. Obviously, it has kicked off since our last show. Three teams currently leading the way after two games: Liverpool Ladies, Notts County Ladies and Chelsea Ladies. Obviously, as we have Gilly here, a Chelsea defender, it would be rude of me not to talk about how her team has started. A win away at Bristol Academy and a draw at home to Liverpool. Gilly, are the team generally happy with how the season started?
Yeah, I think we're happy with it. I think against Bristol, obviously we had a really, really good first half, but in the second half we seemed to take our foot off the gas a little bit, and Bristol crept into it. So, I mean, we're positive that the two goals we've conceded in all competitions so far has been two penalties. And that's one of the main reasons why I come here, was a new challenge, but also as well to improve Chelsea's defensive record. They leaked too many goals last season, and for us now, we've got the attitude in the back four where we're installing the one that I had at Arsenal, where we don't even want teams to have shots, let alone goals. And it's showing, it's working. We're throwing our body in front of the line and in front of the ball, and we've only conceded two goals through penalties. But, I mean, you could have said that either team could have won in that Liverpool game. Liverpool had chances, and we had quite a few clear-cut chances at the end, so to nick it. But to be playing the runners-up and the winners of last season in our first two games, and to come away with 4 points, like, no one would have been able to write that last season. So we're just taking it game by game and then seeing what happens.
You mentioned you're trying to shore up that Chelsea defence. You're obviously playing alongside Swedish defender Emma Wilhelmsson. You've got Laura Bassett playing in front of you, kind of anchoring the midfield. How's the relationship developing with Emma?
It's going really well. Obviously, I've never known Emma. I've not met her till she signed this season. And she's a lovely girl. We've had quite a good few chats together, but it's obviously about building a new partnership. I mean, yesterday against Man City, Bassett dropped in alongside me, and I had Emma playing at left back. And again, I've never played with Bass. Even at Arsenal, when she was starting, I was on the bench, and then she left, and then I got played. So I've never been able to really build up a solid partnership, apart from obviously playing with Steph last season and then Kira Grant for 4 years before that. But we're reading each other really well, and we're working together, and it will take time. It will take at least half a season, maybe a season, for you to get a click properly with someone. But we're determined to make it work 100%. Whoever plays with each other there, I mean, there's new partnerships building all over the pitch, whether that be in midfield, up front, left back, left winger, right back, right winger. There's new partnerships building all the time, and they're working.
Obviously, you started the season away at Bristol. They finished runners-up last year. A lot of people questioning whether they can maintain that after such a good year where they arguably overachieved. Was it important for Chelsea to make an early statement? Because quite a few people have you as favourites for the league, despite the fact that Emma Hayes saying this is a club still in transition. Because of the acquisitions like yourself and Jisoo Yoon and others, a lot of people making you favourites. So was it important, or how important was it to get off to a good start away at Bristol? Because that was kind of setting a benchmark, wasn't it?
No, it's 100% always good to get off on a good start. You want to get points on board as early as you can. But like Emma says, we are a team in transition. But you know what? For us, we can't go and win the first few games and then don't win the rest of the games in the league. It has to be consistent. And the only way you build up consistency is doing it time and time again, week in, week out. And for us, it's that mentality. Every game, it's a new game. 3 points, clean sheet, 3 points, clean sheet, let's get through to the next round. That's all we talk about in the huddle, and that's all we talk about outside of it. You know what? No one spoke about Chelsea to start this season. No one mentioned anything about us, and that's what we like. We've not come out there, no players have come out there, none of our staff have come out there and said, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. All of we're saying is we want to improve on last season. There's no way I've come here to finish second from bottom. And I know it's the attitude of a lot of the girls, like, you got a lot of girls in that team who deserve to win something, who deserve to feel that, and that's my drive as well as a lot of other players coming in, is that we've been fortunate enough to be in teams where we've won stuff. But there's players there who dream of winning stuff and just haven't had that, been in that team or hadn't had that service before to do it. And we've all got that main focus this year to go and be a winner of whether it be the FA Cup, the Continental Cup or the league. We want to win something, and there's girls in that team and the backroom staff as well that work so hard that they deserve it. They deserve to have the success, and together we're doing it as a team, collectively.
I will talk about some of the other clubs in the league, but I just want to finish on Chelsea. I was at your game at home to Liverpool. There was a controversial decision, and I'm not going to ask you anything to, you know, that's going to get you into any trouble, because that's the last thing I want to do. But Ji So-yoon was obviously sent off, two bookings for diving, both of which were for diving. I saw you go up to the referee after he distributed the red card. Now, I'm not going to ask you what you said to him, but what was the feeling amongst the players when that happened? Because it was harsh. He did dive quite theatrically, but there was contact there. I mean, what was the reaction of the players after that?
I can just promise now that what I said to the referee was 100% clean. I didn't swear, I didn't abuse him or nothing, but I just said to him, you could see there was contact, and we've watched the videos afterwards, and we've seen that there was contact. I mean, G did make a meal out of it, but you know, she's new to this league and she's new to this country, and she'll learn. Like, she was absolutely devastated yesterday when she found out she couldn't even do the warm up with us. Like, she knows she'll never do that again. But maybe she hadn't been so theatrical, he would have got the penalty, because everyone can see that there was contact there. But you know, decisions go your way. Sometimes you get lucky, and another ref may have given that, but then another ref may have given another penalty down the other end against us. So it's hard, but you just have to deal with it. You have to suck it up and get on with it, and then next game you just have to go make sure you go and win it.
Well, you're up there with Liverpool Ladies, one of the other clubs on 4 points. You've obviously played them, as we've just discussed. They opened the season with a 1-0 win over Manchester City Women in the opening game of the season. 1-0 win thanks to Natasha Dowie. What's the perception of the players of Manchester City? Obviously, they must be a little bit of an unknown quantity for you, other than the players that you will know, like Steph Horton and Jill Scott, and the players that have played in the WSL before. There are a lot of players there that you're probably not going to know about, and you obviously played them in the FA Cup yesterday. What's your feelings about them at the moment?
I don't know. The main thing that they've got is they've got a really strong spine. Obviously, when KB comes back as well, but their keeper done well yesterday, but you've got Steph, you've got Tony, you've got Jill all in a straight line, and Tony and Jill are so hard to mark, because they're literally, they go here, they go there, and they make runs of each other. And you can tell that, obviously, where they've played with each other for so long at Everton, it's understandable that they know each other's game. And if you can try and stop that service from the back up to them, or the midfield up to them, then you've got a good chance of shutting them out. You know, there are a lot of players there that were maybe playing in the Northern Prem last year who stepped up. And I don't mean personally in the performances yesterday or the players that were playing, that you could highlight players who had been playing Super League One and had been playing Northern Prem. I don't think you can do it. And you know what? They'll learn hard, some of them players. They'll have to learn quick. It's a big difference between the Super League last year and the Northern Prem and the Southern Prem. And they'll have to learn quick. And you know what? There's no better way than to learn than by losing. I think you lose more when you learn more when you lose, more than when you win. And they'll be up there towards the end of the season. It's only like, what, three games in so far. Like, there's still so much more to do and so many more games to play. That I've said this before, I said it when I went on BT Sports to announce the fixtures, that I couldn't put my name down on any team this year to go and win it. Obviously I'd like to say us, but if I was an outsider looking in, I couldn't put a bet on anyone to go and win it, because I think anyone's in that league.
Man City winless at the moment after obviously losing to Liverpool and then losing at home to Bristol Academy. The other team joining you on 4 points is Notts County Ladies. They've obviously got a win and a draw under their belt. You haven't played them yet, but what have you made of the signings that they've made and the start that they've made?
They've signed good players. They've signed obviously international players, people who are in and around their international team. And you know what? For me, obviously, it's good to see other teams strengthening and for other teams to be around. I mean, obviously, I was at Arsenal at a period where it would be guaranteed that Arsenal would win in the league and they'd probably win by about 12, 15 points, maybe more. And it's nice now. It's healthy competition for everyone and it's better for us as women footballers and for our league in general that it's closer and it's more entertaining because then you'll get more people coming to watch it. If it's the same team winning it all the time and the same teams running away with everything, it gets a bit boring and now we've got that excitement where anyone can literally beat anyone on their day. And obviously I don't look at the table now. I think, you know what, look at us at the end of the season. Like, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And that's exactly the same as what happened last season and the year before when Arsenal wasn't in the run there, and then we ended up season 4 we won it by 10 points, like. And we come back and people are quick, I think, to look at the table early on. But look at the table at the end of the season because that's when it matters.
The other teams, obviously, we haven't mentioned. Birmingham and Arsenal only played the one fixture because of Birmingham's commitments in the UEFA Women's Champions League. They've obviously both opened with a draw. And Everton also on a point, opening the season with a 0-0 away at Birmingham, but then losing at home to Notts County. Speaking about Notts County, Jills, one of your former teammates, Ellen White, it was announced last week that she's damaged her ACL and is likely to miss the season. I've been keeping tabs on, obviously, a lot of leagues across Europe and in America and Australia, and the ACL injury seems to be becoming more and more common in women's football. I mean, from your perspective, how aware and how careful are you guys having to be to try and avoid serious injuries like that? And do you think there is a particular reason why it might be becoming more common? We're obviously not medical experts, so I wouldn't be asking you to give me the ins and outs. But as a player, is it something that concerns you? And what sort of things do you try to do to avoid injuries like that?
I don't know. It's scary because me and Laura Coombs were talking a couple of weeks back on a Tuesday night at training about ACLs. And Coombs has done her ACL as well, and she's done it twice. And I was like, it's one of the most scariest things, I think. Like, anything to do with your knees scares the life out of me. And we spoke about it, and literally at the end of that session, we found out that another player in the WSL had done her ACL. And you know what? We're at a club where Emma Hayes is fantastic with this, where she's all about periodisation and making sure that our loads are right. And, like, obviously for me, someone who last season was training twice a week, sometimes towards the end of the season once a week, to going full-time, that's obviously going to have a load on my legs and potentially my knees as well. And we have to monitor it. So there's going to be times when I have to load off and where I can't do as heavy sessions, where I need that day off more because my body's just not used to it. And for me, I don't want to be training full time and end up being injured anyway, especially something that's like an ACL. I mean, it's one of the most horrible injuries you could ever think or imagine to happen. And I feel sorry for Els, especially for having done it before. But she'll come back stronger with it. She's a fighter and she's got that mentality in her where she won't give up and she'll be back. She'll be in super, super quick time, probably quicker than she's meant to be back. But you know what? It's all about monitoring it, especially like playing on 3G as well, training on that. That doesn't help you with your knees at all. And it's not just necessarily your knees. It's other stuff that's building around it. And then, I mean, a couple of the instances I've heard this season have been non-contact. People just turning and they've been going. And that's the scary thing about it. Like, I think with contact, you can understand it a little bit more of it happening, but when there's no one around you and you're just turning, that's a scary thing. But we're at a club where we've got the staff there. Our physio is fantastic, Lorna. And we've got a sports therapist as well, which, for example, we've got tight muscles or we need some release, she's there releasing us and mobilising us. And they've been a blessing, both of them, especially for me at the start of the season, being out injured with my Achilles. And I probably wouldn't have been as back as quick as I was if it wasn't for them two. And you have to have that support system in the club. It's not just the coach or the manager or the assistant coach, it's about the staff that are around it as well. And hopefully clubs in the Super League have got that structure. I'm sure they have, that the players, whatever injury they'll have, they'll be looked after anyway.
We wish Ellen well. Obviously, other players that I've seen over the last couple of weeks who've suffered ACLs, Brittany Bock at Houston Dash and Tiffany Vimer at Washington Spirit also did hers this week. Obviously Nicole Rolser and Lucy Staniforth are long-term absentees for Liverpool Ladies. We'll move on very quickly and finish off this segment of the show with the FA Cup quarterfinal matches took place this past weekend. Obviously, you were in action away at Manchester City, managed to overcome them 2-1. Notts County Ladies had a difficult tie away at Premier League South side Portsmouth Ladies and managed to overcome them 2-0. And Everton Ladies, arguably creating the shock of the round, a 2-0 win over Liverpool Ladies after a relatively slow start in the WSL, although we do admit that it's only two games in. Did that result surprise you, Jills?
No, we were sitting around on a satellite on Saturday night. We was watching, the Sam was on the telly, and we had like a big projector, and then we were sitting there having a evening dinner, and we heard like, oh my God, it's 2-0, it's 2-0. And I was just like, who's playing? I didn't even know who was playing. And then they're like, Everton are up 2-0. And I was like, what, Everton men? Not completely oblivious to it. And then they're like, no, Everton ladies 2-0 up against. And I was like, who are they playing? And it was like, Liverpool. And everyone was like on their phones then, looking at Twitter. And you know what? From what it seemed like it was a great battle and a great evening. And I think them games, the derby games, there's always tension between Liverpool and Everton. Whenever they play, there's that derby fever. And I think it was the most shock to most people in the league. And I think some of the players as well for both Liverpool and Everton were probably shocked as well. But you know what? Credit to Everton. They've lost some players, some big players this year. But the players that they've got and the youngsters that they've stepped up. And you know what? No team can be ruled out in this competition. And that is the beauty of the FA Cup, is that when you step over that white line, it's the FA Cup. And everybody wants to win the FA Cup. Everyone wants to be in the final of the FA Cup and for the occasion as well. So credit to Everton. I'm sure Liverpool will be hurting over the weekend, but you have to pick yourself up and you have to go again. I said this to the girls yesterday. Obviously, we have the semi-final of the FA Cup, and I said that I don't ever forget the day when Chelsea beat us in the semi-final a couple of years ago. Like, it still hurts me as much. And the defeat against Everton in the FA Cup final when Tash Dowie scored the winner with a couple of minutes to go before penalties, that still haunts me to this day. And it's them experiences, like I said, that make you stronger and you learn more from. But credit to Everton. Obviously, that would be an interesting tie between Everton and Notts County as well. I couldn't say who I think would win it. I think it's literally anyone on that day, whoever takes their chances and is able to keep them out as well. But it'll be exciting FA Cup ride for most people.
Well, you mentioned that semi-final of a couple of years ago. I was at that game at Brentford Football Club, and I think it was a ridiculously good performance from Sarah Quantrill in the Chelsea goal that kind of prevented Arsenal from going through to the final. But the irony is that you could now meet them in the semi-final. They've obviously got to overcome Birmingham City in their quarter-final, which will be played upcoming, I think it's next week. Looking forward to a potential meeting with your old club and looking to ruin their semi-final chances once again, but albeit on the other side.
Yeah, obviously I'm looking forward to playing them in the league as well, and obviously the Continental Cup. But if we get them, we get them. And you know what? It's having to be professional and do a job. I want to be in that FA Cup final more than anyone. And if I have to beat them along the way, I have to beat them along the way. And you know what? I'm a Chelsea player now. And you know what? I wouldn't say I'm falling in love with the club, but I'm loving this team. Like, I love the girls and I love the setup, and I want us to succeed. And while I'm wearing that Chelsea shirt, I'll always want them to succeed. You know what, whoever we face, Birmingham or Arsenal, I think that's a tough draw, especially with them two playing previously in the Champions League. I said I don't think Arsenal will allow Birmingham to beat them for a third time. That's, I think, just purely an Arsenal mentality as well. I think they'll be more fired up, and I think it'll be a closer game than the previous two Champions League games. But again, whoever we face, we're determined. We don't care who we face, really. We just want to get in that cup final.
So that's the FA Cup done. There is now a break in the Women's Super League. We now have a period of fixtures that we'll see a lot of clubs competing in the Continental Cup. I have Gilly's Chelsea against my club, Watford Ladies, coming up. So I'm hoping that you'll go easy on us, Gilly, because being a WSL 2 side, it's going to be a big challenge for us. But that rounds up the WSL. And when we come back, we will have a chat about the recent PFA Awards, which took place this past weekend.
The Women's Football Podcast. Follow the podcast on Twitter at WFPod.
Okay, so this past weekend, the PFA Awards took place in England, which recognises the nominated players who have been recognised by their fellow peers. In the women's game, Lucy Bronze picked up the PFA Player of the Year, and Martha Harris was the recipient of the Young Player of the Year. For the first time also, the awards saw a Team of the Year selected, and I will quickly run through that. The team consisted of Siobhan Chamberlain, Lucy Bronze, Gemma Bonner, Gemma Rose, Martha Harris, Gemma Davison, Farrah Williams, Jordan Nobbs, Nicole Rolser, Tash Dowie and Danielle Carter. Gilly, you will have seen the awards last night. What did you make of, first of all, Lucy Bronze winning Player of the Year and Martha Harris winning Young Player of the Year?
No, full credit to Lucy. I said it last night to my mate when I come home that I could see Lucy winning it. Obviously, she's had a fantastic season at Liverpool and then got called up to England and is starting now at England. You know, Lucy's a great girl. I get along with her really well, and I'd like to think one day that we'd be able to play alongside each other as centre back. Even though I don't think at times she likes to be in the centre back, I think she just likes to be right back and run up and down that wing. But I've obviously known Lucy since we was both younger. We played alongside each other for the under 17s at England. That's fully deserved for her, and obviously it's great to see other young players as well. Even though she's my age, winning the senior one, she's only fantastic for our football as well, and the youth are the next generation of both England and the Super League football. And it's good to see so many of the youngsters representing us, especially as well with Martha Harris coming in and winning the Young Player of the Year. And I think sometimes it's seen as a banker or a guarantee that certain players will win the awards as soon as they're nominated. But it's nice. I think Martha may have been seen as the underdog the competition and in that running. The other players that she faced against, like Dan Carter and Jordan Nobbs, and it's just nice, I think, to see someone different winning something. It's the same with teams. A team winning something different. And obviously, in the sense of Lucy, she had some strong players she was up against. I mean, obviously, Tash Dowie, top goal scorer, and obviously Kimmy Little in there as well. And then other players too, but neither of my nominations made it, so I'm guessing I ain't got that much of a say with the votes. Team of the Year, obviously it's gutting. Any of our back four, to be fair. We had the least amount of goals conceded in the league, but not one of us can get in there, which is a shame to say. And especially as well, I said it as well, that, I mean, Alex Scott, she didn't miss one single minute of any Arsenal game, and she can't get in there as well. Probably one of the best, if not the best, right back in this country. She should be representing us 100%. And again, like we said, obviously we had good representation with Jordan, Dan and Gemma in there. Gemma playing in a position that I've not seen her play in, the number 10. She's usually on the right. But yeah, that's a strong team. Maybe a team could be formed. Some club can come in and create a lot of money and put that team together, and we'll see how well they'll do.
You could almost make it an England team. I think apart from Nicole Rolser, they are all English players. So you could, Mark Sampson could in fact just pick the rest of the players other than Nicole Rolser and put them out and represent England. But I thought it was quite interesting. I think you're right. I think Lucy Bronze was a worthy winner. And I think it's worth mentioning the fact that she's had a horrible time with injuries in the past with Everton. And I think what a turnaround for someone like that. And I guess it can give inspiration to other players who've maybe had injuries and have almost, you know, almost been a forgotten player in a way.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Lucy's tough mentally. Like, one of the most competitive people I think I've ever come across. And she is tough mentally. She'll be able to bounce back from anything. And it's the same, you're looking at the likes of Steph. I mean, the injuries that Steph's had, for her to be bouncing back, England captain, like, she's obviously been in massive in the Olympics as well. And no matter what injury you get, these players are showing that you can bounce back from anything. If you've got that mental toughness, you can bounce back from anything. But I think they should put that PFA team together, do a PFA team starting 11 against others, and we'll see how well they get on.
And also a big congratulations to Martha Harris. I think you're absolutely spot on, Gilly. I think she would have been an underdog to a lot of people. I would be the first to admit that I probably had Lucy Bronze down to win the Young Player, but the fact that Lucy won the main award and Martha wins the Young Player, obviously she's now been picked up by Liverpool after her time at Lincoln, so very well deserved for Martha. I'm not going to bring Gilly in on this one because I don't want to get her into trouble, but one of the things that I did pick up on was the fact that Kim Little has been nominated for the main award but hasn't made the Team of the Year. So I'm a little bit confused by that one, how that can actually happen, because if she's good enough to make the final six of the award, how is it that she's not then good enough to make the final 11 in terms of Team of the Season? So a bit of a strange one. I've openly said on Twitter that my nomination would have gone to Siobhan Chamberlain. I think she's been the best keeper in the league since it started 3 years ago, but No doubt about it. Lucy Bronze, very worthy winner. And Martha Harris, of course, as well, with her Young Player of the Year. I'm going to move on very quickly and very briefly to the UEFA Women's Champions League. Obviously, the semi-final games did take place this past weekend. Obviously, England was represented by Birmingham City Ladies. Valiant effort from them, Gilly. Obviously, did lose the second leg to Tirso 3-0. A double by Kristen Press, who just seems to get her name on the score sheet every week. And Marta scoring in injury time after earlier missing a penalty. I mean, I think a lot of people expected that. It was a David versus Goliath when you look at Birmingham's young players and the number of internationals that Tirso have got. But they can be proud of that, can't they? And you would certainly know that, having been in the Champions League a number of years yourself.
Yeah, definitely. They can be massively proud of themselves. I think, again, Birmingham were the underdogs in that competition all the way through. And they've showed, obviously, beating Arsenal and then drawing that first leg 0-0. That's a massive result for them. And you know what? I think that's any team. When you play in Champions League, the first thing you think of is don't let them score an away goal. Just don't let them score an away goal. And then it's gutting that they didn't manage to get a goal over there. And you know what? I've played in Sweden and I was on the bench when Arsenal played against Umeå, and the atmosphere over there is different. I was going to say it's different gravy, but it's different quality, like 1,000,000%. It's, when you're in someone else's home turf, home territory, I think that's what benefited Birmingham, was that the fact they had their home crowd, and obviously good crowds over there. They've got good support over in Sweden. We was watching the highlights yesterday on the coach on the way home, and three good goals. Marta's goal just bopped straight into the corner, like underneath Spenny. You know what? I felt sorry for Spenny. She was diving around in her orange kit, but sometimes there's just that quality is just pipped. When you've got players like they've got, their individual qualities, they're going to step up and they're going to win games for you.
You played when you were at Arsenal, you played against Gothenburg in a latter round, if I remember rightly, and I believe Kristen Press was playing up front for Gothenburg at the time, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. What was it like playing against someone like her? Because she is a constant menace, her name is always on the score sheet, and she just seems to get better and better.
So, you know what? I'm not 100% sure that I played in that game. I think I might have been on the bench. But I've watched them. I mean, I've watched Mara as well. I remember sitting on the bench when we was at Arsenal, and Emma Hayes was sitting next to me, and Mara was on the ball, and she was just like, oh, what a beautiful player. Look at her feet. And for me, I'm just like, someone hit her. Just someone tackle her. Like, you know what? Obviously, when you've got individual talent like that, when times get tough and some teams like, result in their defending and they're tough, you need to have that individual quality to break them down. And me and Coombsy, we watched both all three of the goals, and they were all class goals, all good finishes.
Hamish would hammer me for not knowing that you were on the bench in that game, so I'm going to give him his moment of glory, and I'll tell him that I got that one wrong, because I've hammered him in the past for things like that. But one club you have come up against, now don't tell me that you were on the bench for this one, was against Wolfsburg in the Champions League. Yeah, you did play against Wolfsburg. They are obviously going to be facing Tirso in the final. They overcame Potsdam in an all-German semi, 4-2 on aggregate. Nadine Kessler on the score sheet, Alexandra Popp with a couple as well. What, from your time of playing against them, makes them such a force and so difficult to play against? Obviously, it'll be their second Champions League final in a row.
You know what? When we played Wolfsburg at home, I thought we should have beat them. And I think that was a lot of the people's feelings, the fans and the players as well, that we had our chances to go and beat them. We went away from home and they're just machines. I mean, see, last year Arsenal, we wasn't full-time when we played them. And you know what? Sometimes there's only so much you can do. Same with like Leon. When you watch Leon play, like, they just know where each other are, and you're going to get that when you train full time with each other, and that's what you do for a job. You're going to get that bond, and you're going to be able to play with each other and know where each other are without even looking. And you can see that as the competition goes on further on. Obviously, when it was at Arsenal, we could only get to the semi-final because we just eventually got pipped at the last post by teams that have been playing with each other for a long time, players that I've been training full time, and 100% Wolfsburg were like machines when we played them out there, and they went and got one goal, and then they wanted to go and get another one, and they had their home crowd there. But I think they proved though against Leon that it's anybody's final. when they played Lyon at Stamford Bridge. Was it, yeah, Stamford Bridge? I don't think... I think people said Lyon, it's going to be Lyon all day. They're going to win it. And then Wolfsburg won it. So I don't think... It's the same with the FA Cup. I don't think you could say either team, to be fair. I think it's whoever turns up on that day. Whoever's doesn't get overwhelmed by the occasion and whoever's focused on putting the ball in the back of the net and shining out at the other end, that would be the team that win.
Admittedly, I was one of those that thought Lyon would win it last year, although I did tip Wolfsburg to win it this year. And if people don't believe me, they can listen back to an earlier show. Just for the record, Hamish tipped Potsdam. They've gone out of the semi-final, so whatever the outcome, I've gone one better than you, pal. But it'll be an interesting final. Obviously, it takes place in Lisbon, I believe, off the top of my head. The date is the 22nd of May. So we'll certainly be watching that one closely, and that will round up our UEFA Women's Champions League chat. And when I come back, I'll be talking to Sarah Gerke about what's been going on in the NWSL.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Want more views from those in the game?
Read the blog at
thewfblog.wordpress.com.
This is the part of the show where we discuss the NWSL, and I'm delighted to be joined by regular expert, someone who is becoming more and more known, getting followed left, right and centre by players and fellow journalists, Sarah Gerke. Sarah, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So rather than going over the results like we have done previously, we thought we would open it up to Twitter followers to find out exactly what burning issues they think are worth mentioning and what's worth discussing. So the first one I got was from Wizzy Probs, which is an interesting username, and he or she has said, how about discussing the Washington Spirit's 2-2 start despite a killer early schedule?
Yeah, the fact that they have two wins already is pretty surprising considering how many wins they had last season. They also had a killer stretch where in 1 week they played three games, two of those being on the road, the first against Seattle, which was a loss, and then most recently on Saturday against Chicago. So coming off that tough road stretch, coming at the end of some injuries which happened in Seattle, for example, Christine Nair didn't play because she had a quadricep strain. So the fact that they pulled a win out of that game was very impressive, and for the most part, their schedule is much easier throughout the season. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if they can keep up those somewhat winning ways throughout the season when they're not quite faced with as tough of a schedule, from both the perspective of how many games they have in a short period of time, as well as being on the road for those.
Now, obviously, being an English-based podcast, we're keeping tabs on Jodie Taylor. She's a friend of the show, someone that we get on with very well. I noticed that Mark Parsons didn't start her over the weekend. Is that based on the fact that she's not managed to produce a goal in the previous fixtures, or was she carrying a niggle, or was it a case of he wanted to try Rene Cuellar and see how it worked? Because obviously we know Jodie can score goals. She hasn't started with a goal yet, but give her chances and she'll stick them away.
I would say my guess at why Mark didn't start her is just because she had played so many minutes in the previous two games before that. And, you know, I think he sees her as an integral part of his offensive plan moving forward. So rather than risk an overuse injury or put her in when he didn't need to, he decided to rest her and put some other forwards out on the field. And I think her not scoring has a little bit more to do with getting her service, and, you know, she's been marked by more than one player throughout most of the matches that she's been in. She's missed a couple of opportunities, but I would say most other teams recognize how important she is to the Spirit, and that's why she rarely finds herself anywhere near being alone near the box.
Absolutely. Well, good start for Washington 2-2, despite the difficult start, as we mentioned. So we go to Ian H, who said, how about discussing FC Casey's slow start? Now, from a personal perspective, massively surprising to see FC Casey where they are at the moment. But there's a part of it that's not surprising when you look at the fact that they lost Desiree Scott, they lost Lauren Sesselman, and it's difficult to replace players like that, isn't it?
It's definitely difficult to replace those two players. They were, you know, crucial pieces for them last season. But FC Casey has added, you know, other players, whether it be Phillips or Rodriguez. You know, they've added as well. I would say it has been surprising how slowly they've started. In fact, two playoff teams from last season are the two teams that are currently at the bottom of the table. So Sky Blue FC and then FC Kansas City. So FC Kansas City is headed to Chicago this Wednesday, so I know that they'll definitely be planning to try to pick up points there. That should be a good matchup that probably favors them. And then they continue playing teams in the Midwest as they head down to Texas to play Houston. So I would say absolutely they're looking for 6 points from those games, and anything less would be disappointing.
Is there an argument that they might have been found out? We obviously know they mentioned it on commentary a number of times, that FC KC gave up a lot of late goals towards the end of last season. They obviously, and I hate to use the term, they blew their chances in the playoff game at home to Portland. Is there a concern possibly that they may have been found out and teams have actually figured out how to play against them and how to stop that attacking threat that was so lethal last season?
I don't think that's necessarily the case. If you look at their stats through the season thus far, they've generated quite a bit of shots and shots on goal. They're just not finishing them. So once they can actually, you know, start to finish those chances, they're going to be right up with these other teams that have beaten them to date. So I think either they're going to have to tighten up defensively and not let teams score as many, or they're going to have to convert more of those chances. When Washington beat them in Washington, you know, FC Kansas City had two or three times the amount of shots that Washington did. But, you know, the amount of shots that you have doesn't matter if you're not converting those into goals.
Absolutely. Well, Holly Allen asked the question, what's the feeling about the standard of refereeing been in the United States? It's been obviously a talking point recently in England. Is it the same over there? Now, I don't know if you want to discuss this because I don't know if I should be saying this or whether you want to keep it quiet for now, but you're writing an article on the refereeing standards in the NWSL, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Both kind of the style of play in America, which I think is somewhat different than England, just because it's always been a very physical game here. So I'm kind of touching on that and, you know, how that translates to both refereeing. And I'm not sure if you have this in the WSL, but the NWSL has a disciplinary committee, which is kind of something that does interact with the referees. But I think that's a valid question, and it comes up every year in the NWSL or whatever professional women's league we have about, you know, it being, people considering it being of a low quality. You know, every week there are a couple crucial calls that really seem to impact the outcomes of games, whether it's, you know, players not being called for yellow cards or players being awarded yellow cards seemingly, you know, kind of for no reason when you consider that other players committed a similar foul but weren't given a card. So there's a problem with inconsistency. But then there's also an issue with, I guess, just trying to maintain control of the game. If you look at, if you watch the Washington game on Saturday, you know, fairly few fouls were called in the first half. And then suddenly, in a tremendously short time frame in the second half, the referee had handed out something like four yellow cards. And it was clear that he was trying to, you know, get control of the match as it was getting very chippy. But, you know, if you're looking at the flow of the game, you could argue that the reason it got so chippy is because there, you know, he didn't intervene sooner. So I would say across the league, there's an issue with poor calling, but also just completely inconsistent calling. So, and when it gets to the point where you feel like it's having an outcome on games, that's when it really seems to become problematic. So I think that's going to be an ongoing dialogue throughout the year, as it was last season.
Okay, well, we'll certainly look out for your article. I'm sure that we'll certainly give it a retweet and a mention when it's actually up and online. The last one I've got is from Sandy, and I think this is probably one that we'll be able to assess longer term and later in the season. Sandy asks the general view of how the game compares to last season in the NWSL, and from my perspective, I think it's something that is probably going to be evaluated later on. I think it's difficult to judge after two or three games, but I don't know if you've got any different views, sir.
I think you can already tell that the on-the-field product in the league is better this season. And, you know, there are a couple of easy metrics to look at that by. So just the matter, just the sheer number of quality internationals we have in the league this year versus last, there are just more of them. You can already see that in the impact of, you know, Kim Little joining Seattle. You know, obviously Fishlock was there last year, but the addition of Little is something new for this year. You look at Taylor in Washington, but you can also see that it seems like every team is playing better quality football this year. And, you know, speaking personally, I, you know, watch every minute of Washington since I'm covering them. And just to compare this, you know, the style and quality that they had in 2013 compared with just a couple of games this year, you know, they've improved by a country mile. It's, you know, a pleasure to watch the attacking style of play that they have this year, that they're working on their movement, connecting passes. So just to see the quality and style of teams evolve year over year as coaches get used to the league and players get used to the league, I think that that's absolutely improved. And then also just the players you have in the league itself has also, you know, raised the quality of play that we're seeing as well, whether that's, you know, internationals coming from abroad and playing, or the amazing college class that, you know, came in this last year. If you look at Crystal Dunn, Kalia Ojai, Julie Johnston, Vanessa DiBernardo, you know, they're all starters on their teams. So that is absolutely increasing the quality of play of the league. So.
Okay, great stuff. Well, that's from the followers on Twitter. I guess one of the things that we discussed before we came on was some high-profile players not finding the back of the net yet, which obviously puts pressure on them the longer it goes on. The one that I would pick out is Christine Sinclair, obviously hasn't managed to bag one for Portland yet, and there was a player that you were looking to pick up on, but I'm going to keep quiet on this one because I'm in Seattle in a couple of weeks and I'm looking to speak to her, so I'll let you fire away with this one.
Yeah, Sydney Leroux hasn't scored yet, and given, you know, the dominating performances of the Reign in their last few games, that's fairly surprising. And it's not for a lack of chances. You know, on Sunday, she had a basically wide open look at net and hit it off the post, which is not exactly something you expect from, you know, a leading scorer and forward on the U.S. women's national team. So I don't think it's necessarily a problem yet at this point, but it is fairly surprising that she hasn't scored yet, and something I'm sure, you know, has to be bothering her somewhat.
Do you think there's a general, maybe a fatigue amongst some of the U.S. women's national team players? Obviously, you mentioned Sid hasn't scored yet. Megan Rapinoe has obviously missed two fixtures through an injury. I look at some of the other American players that have started the season, maybe looking a little bit more jaded than maybe some of the other players that are starting afresh. Is that me misreading, or is that a fair comment?
It's certainly been tough at the national team level because of the turnover of Tom Sermani, but if you look at a lot of players in the NWSL who aren't at the national team level, you know, they played on off-season loans abroad, so they probably had more game experience and more game time in the off-season than the national team players did. So I think, you know, it's tough to compare, you know, how jaded or overworked a player gets, but, you know, given the coaching turnover and the losses in the All-Garb, I would expect the U.S. national team players to really be coming out and working to get back firing on all cylinders and really prove that those two losses were an anomaly, that the U.S. is, you know, back on track to being, you know, a world power. And so I absolutely wouldn't expect them coming back to their club environments feeling like, you know, they're overworked or like they don't have, you know, something that they're really trying to prove. I think that they have a lot to prove, and that can be done at both the club level and the international level. So I think even looking forward to the game between the U.S. and Canada in early May, I would expect an extremely spirited performance by both teams.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. I was going to finish on the fixture between the U.S. and Canada, obviously taking place the 8th of May in Winnipeg. What's your views and thoughts on that one? Obviously a big game. Canada will be looking to try and end that barren run that they've got against the U.S. I know Desiree Scott is particularly looking forward to that one because it's being played in her hometown. What's your thoughts? What's your feelings? Obviously, post-Tom Sermani, it's going to be interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, the matchups between Canada and the U.S. are always fairly spirited, both on the player and the fan side. So it should be really interesting to see, you know, the level of intensity that's displayed by both teams. I think that both have a lot to prove. Canada, you know, is going to be hosting the World Cup. And, you know, ever since their close loss in the Olympics, they've been trying to avenge that by beating the U.S. Haven't been able to do that. And on the U.S. side, you know, those disappointing results in the Algarve Cup, they don't currently have a head coach. They have a lot of things that they need to prove as well. So I think that this could potentially prove to be one of the most exciting matchups between two countries. It could be one of the most interesting matchups between two countries, you know, in the past couple of matchups.
Fantastic. Well, we look forward to that. Just one last thing I wanted to mention before we finish up on all things America. Jess Fishlock and Steph Catley, who obviously Jess playing in the Seattle Reign team and Steph Catley due to join Portland Thorns, both recognised at the W League Awards down in Australia today, on the day that we're recording. Steph Catley was named Young Player of the Year and Jess Fishlock was named Players Player of the Year and Media Player of the Year. So congratulations to both of them. Sarah, thank you for joining me. I guess the next time that we speak, I will probably be a bit closer to where you are. So hopefully we can catch up and we'll discuss what's been going on in America between now and then.
All right, thank you.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Okay, so I'm back with Jilly, and obviously having had her on the show, I've not had an opportunity to ask her too much about how she's getting on, and obviously I gave people the opportunity to ask some questions, and I had some via email, believe it or not. Not too many on Twitter, but certainly through email. So, Jill's, get ready, and I'm going to fire some off at you. First one comes from Anne. She didn't give a surname, and she said, "My daughter is a talented footballer, but is at an age where she is starting to lose interest. What can I do to keep her motivated and ensure that she sees it through to when she can play at a senior level?"
I think that was my mum and dad's worry, that I'd get to an age where you start getting distracted by other things. I mean, I run an under 13s girls football team, and for them, the parents' worries are they're going to start liking boys, they're going to want to go out with their mates, they're going to want to be going to cinema when they should be preparing for a game day, and they're going to be come down with homework, a lot of it, that they're not going to want to come and train, or they're not going to want to come and play football. You know what, I think pushing them and telling them they have to do it, I think sometimes pushes them the other way. For me, it was, I loved the game, 1,000,000% when I was growing up, I loved it, but there was a time when I was a bit like, I might as well just give up. It was the fact that my mum and dad said, "Go on then, go and give up." I was like, "Oh, I don't want to give up. No, I don't want to give up." But for me, I just say, support her. Keep offering her the options. If she wants to do it, she wants to do it. If she doesn't want to do it, then you can't stop them. You can't make them go and play something or play a sport they don't want to do. I get a lot of kids come on my holiday clubs. They don't want to be there. They're just being there because parents need a babysitter, in other terms. And it's hard to see children like that who they don't want to be there. Their mind's elsewhere, and it makes it harder for coaches when you've got children being there who don't want to be there. So I just say that obviously as she's getting older, she's going to be making choices. Might not be the choices that parents want, but they've got to learn some way. So I just support her. I keep giving her the opportunities to go and play football and offering her support. But if she decides she doesn't want to do it, then can't physically make them go, because I think it'll just push them further away from the sport in the future.
A bit reverse psychology used by your parents then, Jules. "Yeah, don't bother. And you just think, "No, actually, I'm going to do the opposite of what you say, Mum. Sorry, I'm sticking with it. But for those who don't know, you do actually do a little bit of coaching, don't you, with young players? You obviously are involved with Millwall Lionesses Centre of Excellence, obviously young players there. What's it like for you trying to keep them motivated and trying to help them develop to become better players and more importantly, to keep their interest?
I don't know, I said it, Mills Centre of Excellence are in my blood. I've started off there in the under 10s. I love the girls to bits. I love the club. It's a real family feeling. But for me, it's about keeping the girls entertained. It's about making my coaching sessions interesting. Having a laugh with them, a joke, that I'm approachable and they can come and talk to me about things. And I'm approachable for the parents as well, because the girls might not tell me something that they need to, but the parents are good. And I've been with some of the girls for 3-4 years. So you build up relationships with them. And for me, more so, it's not just necessarily about the technical stuff I teach them. It's about having passion and playing with your heart. And I was always taught, if you don't have it when you're younger, you will never have it. It needs to be installed at a young age, and that fighting spirit and that mentality. And I've got my girls now devastated if they don't keep a clean sheet. And that's, for me, we played a few weeks ago, and it was 2-0 we was winning, and literally the last kick of the game, I think it was Norwich, scored to make it 2-1, and my girls were just heartbroken, and I was like, "Well, you've won." They're like, "But we didn't keep a clean sheet." And for me, I was so proud, because to have that mentality at under 13 level, that they don't want to concede goals, for me as a defender, I'm proud of them massively, and you get so much out of young children. They're just free. They have no restrictions. They just tell you the truth, and they tell you how it is. They keep me on my toes 1,000,000%. But I love it to bits.
Okay. This one didn't leave a name. He or she said, of all the players that Chelsea signed, which one were you most looking forward to playing when you joined the club?
I would say Chappers, but obviously I've played with Chappers for a few years now. G's a really good girl, a lovely girl. She's learning English. We're teaching her some English words. I said it before in an interview, Rach Williams, 100%, because I'm just glad that she's not going to be hitting me in games, and I'm not going to be on the receiving end of elbows and headbutts. I'd say definitely 100% Rachel Williams.
I think that interview was with me, if I'm not mistaken. Rob asked, who in the team is a practical joker?
Practical joker? I'd like to say myself at times. I think, you know what, I don't know. We've had a few. I'd say Rach Williams is definitely behind a few of them. I think she's been killing our physio, Lorna, recently. I'd say, you know what, we've got good banter. We've got good banter between us, but there's a few practical jokers secretly underneath there. I think they'll get more exposed as the season goes on.
They mentioned you're teaching Jiso Yun some English. Kelly Smith told us that at Arsenal, they're teaching Shinobu Ono and Yukari Kinga some English as well, and they've been coming out with slang and words like soz and things like that. Is there any belters that Jiso Yun's come out with that you didn't expect?
Some of them I don't think I can put on this show, and the Chelsea girls will know what I'm on about. But the other day, she lifted her top up and she was looking at her six pack, and I said, "Put it away, G." And she was like, pull it away. What do you mean, pull it away?" And she couldn't say it, and I was like, put it away. So, but we're teaching her more so football terms. She's been going to English school, and she's been showing me some of the sentences she's learned. Like, I took the dog to the park, and I'm like, when are you going to ever use that on a football pitch? You're not. So, with the girls, have been teaching her switch and man on and press, and we've been getting her to reenact us to show us what they are. So, which is funny, it's comical, but we're teaching her new words all the time. So. She's learning.
Question I have, has she taught you any Korean, or has Yuki Igimi taught you any Japanese?
No, I haven't actually been able to sit down with G actually and learn some words. A few of the others know some from when they went to Japan. But no, I haven't learned none yet off G. I might pull her in training tomorrow night and get some words off her.
The only one I know is konnichiwa, and I think that's hello in Japanese. That's about as much as I can do. Final question came from Lynn, and I quite liked this question. She saw your YouTube video for BT Sport, and she wanted to know if you could demonstrate any more Scouse for us.
Oh, my old Scouse accent. Oh, no, you put me on the spot right here now. I'll try one. I was like, oh, what should I say? Give me a sentence and I'll say it.
Tell me something in Scouse. Go with, I think Chelsea are going to win the league.
I can't say that.
Okay, I think I would like Chelsea to win the league.
I'd like Chelsea to win the league.
Do you know what? I don't think that's bad. I don't think that's bad. It's a lot better than what I could do, and I've done some awful accents on this show before. But that will round up the questions that we've had from Jilly. I don't have any more to add because I don't want to keep her for any longer. So when we come back, I will quickly round off coming up.
Download and subscribe to the show on iTunes.
Just search for Women's Football Podcast.
Okay, so that was Jilly answering some of your questions and giving us her best Scouse accent, which I don't think was too bad. It's a lot better than what I could do. So thank you very much for tuning in to episode 21 of the Women's Football Podcast. First and foremost, before I do anything else, I've got to thank Jilly. Jilly, have you enjoyed yourself, and would you come back and help me out again, seeing as I do not have a permanent co-host at the moment?
I'd love to. I think I should be your permanent co-host. Is there like a job interview place I can go, like an application I can send off?
You know what, I might have to look at that. I will put an application process together and I'll get some people to apply for it. But no, it's been an absolute pleasure, and obviously we've had you on the show before. I've known you for a few years, and it's always a pleasure to have players like yourself on who I've known for a little while and seen them develop and really making a name for themselves. So I couldn't be more pleased, so thank you very much. Just a few things that I need to rattle off before we go. Obviously, if you want to follow us on Twitter, we're on @WFPod. If you wish to email, you can do. We're on thewfpod@gmail.com. We're on Sport Lobster, which is sportlobster.com/WFpod. We've got a blog, which Jilly blogs for, but hasn't sent me anything recently, so I'm giving her the evils as we speak. That's at thewfblog.wordpress.com. Of course, if you want to listen to us, you can download us on iTunes, but please do make a note. We have now moved in terms of our web-based show. We are now no longer on SoundCloud. We are now on Audioboo, and you can find us on Audioboo. That's audioboo.fm/WFpod. You can find all the shows on there. This show will be going up there, but if you do download us through iTunes, you can continue to listen to us that way. So, final word, Jilly, thank you very much and good luck for the rest of the season. I will no doubt speak to you again soon, so if you'd like to sign off very quickly, we will say goodbye.
Wait, can I just say as well that I've managed to do a whole show without mentioning Herbalife? That's amazing for me, and I think that's a feat in itself. But yeah, I look forward to being on here again soon.
Well, she said she'd done a whole show without mentioning it, and now she has done, so she's failed. But thank you very much, guys, and speak to you all soon.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.